This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, a little later on this segment, we've got the video that went viral yesterday from the upcoming 30 for 30, the New York Sack Exchange. And I closed my eyes while I was watching it. It translates just as well in an audio format. Mark Gastineau v. Brett Favre. We'll get to that in about 15 minutes or so. Astros are a big topic right now. We'll get to the Texans as well. Big game coming up against Miami. We got all kinds of stuff to get into today. But I know front of mind for a lot of Astro fans right now is, how does this unfold over the next few weeks? How much does retaining Alex Bregman factor into the Astros' handling of Kyle Tucker and Framber Valdez? It would seem a little backwards to give Alex Bregman a deal that really stretches the boundaries for Jim Crane, and then you turn around and trade Kyle Tucker and or Framber Valdez, you know? So it's going to be a really interesting few weeks. Here is John Morosi, I believe of the MLB Network, talking about the Astros getting heavy interest from teams looking to trade for Kyle Tucker.
This is a really interesting story. Now, what I can say is this. The Yankees do like Kyle Tucker. The Cubs do like Kyle Tucker. But the Astros still like Kyle Tucker as well. And so, at the moment, there is still a higher chance of Kyle Tucker being an Astro on opening day than being elsewhere. But let me tell you why there's at least some chance of a trade involving Kyle Tucker. The overall free agent prices right now are quite high. And the number of teams with a great capacity to add high-dollar free agents is relatively small, which means trade candidates like Tucker, even those entering his final year before free agency, are more valuable than ever. And you just saw on that board a moment ago where Kyle Tucker stands among the preeminent sluggers in baseball. He actually had a higher adjusted OPS than Juan Soto in 2024. Now, he played in half as many games, to be clear. He was injured. He had the stress reaction in his shin. So that is the health piece of it, and how many games he'll play is a real consideration here. He is not Juan Soto. But when you think about the Yankees' interest in Tucker, he could help them replace the production they lost in Juan Soto. And for that reason, and Dana Brown acknowledging yesterday that he'll listen on everybody, including Tucker and Framber Valdez, definitely got the attention, Lauren, of a lot of people in this lobby last night.
Okay, I have no doubt that there's a lot of teams that would look to trade for Kyle Tucker. My big question is, what exactly are you willing to give up? I'll believe it when I see it, that teams have an appetite to give up a package the Astros would be willing to part, that would make the Astros to be willing to part with Tucker for just 1 year of Kyle Tucker after what just happened with Juan Soto. After the Yankees just traded a bunch of prospects for Juan Soto and he left them at the altar after 1 year. I will believe that when I see it.
Right. The Yankees gave up five prospects or five players for Juan Soto, and now they're left, you know, with no one. I think the Yankees, more than any other team, probably figured, oh, yeah, of course he'll re-sign with the Yankees because we're the Yankees and we're going to be able to spend more money, et cetera, et cetera. You can see by the reaction of their fans, they don't realize, like, no, you're not the Yankees of old that just get to do whatever you want to do all the time.
This was the thing that people criticized Bill O'Brien for with the Laremy Tunsil trade. you're going to trade all this capital for a guy who's on a contract here. Well, you better get that contract done. And the Yankees, I think that's probably a big part of the bitter feelings among Yankee fans and maybe even the Yankees themselves in the building is like, We're the Yankees. This was not supposed to happen.
We don't get left at the altar.
Never.
We're the hot chick, right? Yeah. Meanwhile, it's like, no, you're like the 39-year-old hag who's been on meth for 7 years. Right. You were hot back in the day.
Yeah.
But now you're one of those cautionary tales.
That's
I'm looking at a timeline of the Yankees, you know, their mugshots over the years, and the Yankees have gotten more and more haggish over the years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think the big thing is, who out there has the willingness to trade five players and promising young players for Kyle Tucker for a one-year rental?
Yeah.
And I don't think, I'd be surprised if there's an offer that Astros fans feel good about.
Right.
Because all we're thinking is, that's Kyle Tucker.
Yeah.
All these other teams are thinking is, yeah, he's Kyle Tucker, but he's Kyle Tucker for 1 year and then he's probably gone. Or we just, you know, we don't have the money. So if he does get traded, I guess I would hope it's to one of the big money teams that feels like they'll definitely be able to retain him, so they're willing to give up a bunch of prospects.
Well, or that they're willing to negotiate and actually give him a contract. There's nothing stopping teams from giving him a contract unless Kyle Tucker truly wants to wait it out and go be a free agent. But, you know, if you can open up a window, I think I saw in one of these articles, of 72 hours that allows Tucker to negotiate a deal with one of these teams you'd be willing to trade him to. So I think that would be the dream scenario, is if you trade him to a team and he signs an extension there and that team feels good about giving up. They're going to give up more if he's locked in. You know what I mean? Yeah. If he's locked up. And I think what's your tolerance right now for a Tucker trade? Does it depend? For me, it depends on what happens with Bregman. I got to wait and see what happens with Bregman. If they don't re-sign Bregman, put Kyle Tucker on eBay as far as I'm concerned, and let the bidders let it flow, man. That's how I feel.
I guess maybe there's a stupid naive part of me that still thinks that maybe the Astros would totally blow up all of their strategy and their whole operating procedure
you gotta
and
let
actually
that go.
Give Kyle Tucker that contract. Yeah, I have to let that go.
Yes, you got to let that go. Yeah. Yeah. You'll sleep better at night if you just let it go. Not for
the next
few nights.
I don't want to let it. I know. Because then, so what are we doing? Do we need to rip the Band-Aid off right now?
Yes.
I just haven't accepted reality, have I?
Yeah.
I just, the Kyle Tucker is as good as gone. That's the reality you're telling me?
Yes, that's the reality. He's way more good as gone than Alex Bregman is right now.
Why can I not accept this? I know this.
I don't know. You're the most optimistic person that I know about the window right now, too. And I know you hate window talk. We've got the audio to prove it from a couple years ago with the Correa situation. The window did stay open after Correa. You were right.
I have an undying belief that, yes, you can keep windows open forever.
Yeah.
And I cherry pick the very, very, very few scenarios in which teams have actually been able to do that is my evidence. Yeah.
Right.
That the Astros can be the 1% of teams that keeps their window. Actually, probably more like 0.5% of teams that keep their window open.
Dude,
forever.
It would be so much more. I mean, it's interesting. It's really interesting. And so this, I don't want to say it would be so much more interesting, because this is super interesting what happens with this team. This is the first time we've been standing at the precipice of the cliff that the window looks out on right now, and we might be about to fall into the abyss here. So that part, it sucks. It is very interesting. If they just hadn't had that offseason where they signed Abreu and Montero, they're in such a better spot financially right now, you know, than you know, that's $30 million. You know, Bregman is going to command $30 million.
And we don't know what we're going to get out of Lance McCullers or Garcia or any of these other guys. It's almost, you're looking at that almost like dead money on the books, too. That's the really hard part of it. But if that's where, if I could set aside all of my youthful optimism about it, then I would have to say, looking at it from an outside perspective, you got to rip the Band-Aid off.
Got to,
and
man.
Yeah, and just if there's, take advantage of right now, where probably maybe the best offer you're going to get for Kyle Tucker is right now, when everybody's up there kibitzing at the meetings, that you got to rip it off.
Well, that's interesting. You saying that this is when you're going to get the best offer for Kyle Tucker. Theoretically, you could get a better offer at the trade deadline. That's when teams get really desperate.
Yeah.
I think... I'm trying to think of how Astro fans are going to react to this if the Astros trade Kyle Tucker. Bregman or no Bregman, if they trade Kyle Tucker, this is a clear message that at a minimum the organization is resetting a little bit here, right?
I mean, you know how Astros fans respond to it, Sean? They get they buy Rockets apparel for Christmas.
Yeah.
That's generally the way it goes. You can tell the barometer of how teams are doing around here is which apparel do you see more of in various places out in public. And it might just shift over towards the Rockets and whatever. I mean, the Texans are kind of at a baseline. They're always going to be relevant because it's NFL.
Yeah.
But you shift your optimism over towards the Rockets.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be really interesting to see what happens. Dana Brown actually at the winter meetings had an update. You mentioned McCullers and Luis Garcia.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's see. We've had updates on both of these guys before. I will mention they neither have pitched since they got Tommy John surgery or whatever the surgery was that Lance had Tommy John surgery a few years ago. The recent surgery he had was, I guess, removing bone spurs from his elbow, whatever the case may be.
Lance is a voodoo doll pincushion.
Yeah. So here was Dana Brown updating us yesterday on McCullers and Luis Garcia.
Lance is currently throwing. I think he's almost up to 100 feet. He's looking really good, nice and free and easy. I've been watching a lot of video of him, actually. And he's been saying that he feels really good. And, you know, Luis, once he continues to stretch it out, once he gets off the mound, we'll probably know more about that in spring training when he starts to throw and stretch it out and compete against some batters. So in terms of him making it out for opening day, we'll have more answers maybe right around the mid-March.
If those guys are able to come back, how much does that do for your pitching depth overall?
Yeah, ultimately, it really increases our pitching depth. Right now, you know, we're probably right around 7 guys that we feel really comfortable with, you know, in terms of, you know, guys that we have in the major leagues and maybe some of our guys in AAA. And if you add Garcia and McCullers to that, you know, you stretch that out to 9, you know, possibly 10 if one of the young guys like Ulloa steps up. So, I mean, it really, really increases our pitching depth. And as I mentioned before, with 162 games, that's very important.
Okay, now this was a similar conversation last year. Like, we got 7 or 8 guys, and imagine when McCullers and Luis Garcia come back. We're going to have this plethora of riches.
Average recovery for Tommy John is between 12 and 18 months, and Garcia got his in May, I believe.
Of 23.
The timeline, obviously, is, like, very... You should be optimistic.
He should be ready to go. Yeah, he should be ready. I think when they were looking for Garcia last year, felt a little aggressive to me.
Yeah.
Getting McCullers and Garcia back would be gravy to me. I'm not counting on either guy right now.
Garcia, I'm okay. Like, Garcia, I'm pretty optimistic about. That I mean, it's a normal timeline now. It's beyond the normal timeline already for when he should be okay. So I'm guessing I'm just penciling Garcia in.
Yeah.
And it's not like, I mean, we don't look at Tommy John surgery nearly like we used to. It's just, okay, yeah, you got, you broke the seal. You got your first Tommy John, and now you'll be back.
Next team odds, Bregman, the Tigers are still the favorite, plus 175. You and I both said Tigers yesterday. I don't know, man. The Yankees at plus 850 feels like value. The Yankees feel like they got spurned by Soto, and now they're like, oh, we got $760 million to go spend. Let's go. Here you go, Freed. Here's 200. Yeah.
The biggest thing for me with Tucker is that when you realize teams like the Cubs and other, it's not just the usual suspects. It's all these reports from all these different places that say they have an interest in Kyle Tucker. I think the people look at, and in the previous clip we played in the last segment of them discussing Kyle Tucker's injury and how that might be a concern, I don't see that at all. I know the way baseball teams operate and the way they look at injuries, and Kyle Tucker's been so durable, and this was an injury that was, yes, it kept him out for a long time, but he got hit by a baseball. There was nothing to suggest that all of a sudden Kyle Tucker's injury prone or something.
Yeah, to you, I guess just to you, yes, 100%. I would say to further illustrate your point about durability, let's pretend that Yordan didn't sign his extension and he's in the same situation as Kyle Tucker, that he's in the last year of arbitration. Yeah. Yordan has had injuries that should make teams pause about giving up 6 prospects, giving him $40 million a year. When he's healthy, he's worth every penny of that, and he's worth every prospect you can give up. But he's had 2 patellar tendon surgeries. He's had random hand issues, oblique issues.
You get nervous every time he slides.
Yes.
He's just got that. He's one of those athletes that no matter how athletic they are, it just, they look like they're a lumbering injury waiting to happen. Yeah, so it's just, it's night and day between the dirt. How do you project these guys out into their mid-30s?
Yeah.
Kyle Tucker, I think, just projects out better than Framber, or what, than Yordan does.
Yeah, no doubt. The one thing that people are pointing out on the text page that that makes it a little easier to part with Kyle Tucker, got a little of that Aaron Judge gene in him. You know, the postseason has not been the best. Text message: Kyle Tucker has no playoff clutch gene. Trade him. Ooh, wow. Let's see here. Honestly, we need to trade Tuck. I'm not that big on him anyways. He's Aaron Judge in the playoffs.
He is about Aaron. You know what? His OPS in the playoffs kind of measures up to...
What is it?
Measures up to Aaron Judge. He's got a 685 OPS.
Yeah,
in
that
the
sucks. And if you're paying... That sucks when you're paying him $7 million or whatever the Astros paid him this last year, 15, whatever it was. It sucks real bad when he's on your team for a decade and you're paying him $40 million a year, you know?
Yeah.
So
now, since his... 2021 was when the lights really came on for him.
Yes.
And like up until the 2023 postseason, he was pretty damn respectable in the play. Like from 2001 to 2002, so it was 2 years. But yeah, these last couple postseasons, it hasn't been the
same.
Well,
go back to 2020 was the COVID year. So his numbers may look a little depressed in like where you're looking right now because he only played 60 games, but in the regular season. But
yeah.
I remember him. I mean, that to me was when Kyle Tucker kind of came alive, was in that COVID season. So, but it's been bad the last couple years. You're absolutely right. 713-572-4610. All right, let's get to this bit of audio. This there's a 30 for 30 coming out about the New York Jets. It's called the New York Sack Exchange. Back in the early to mid 80s, the New York Jets had a fearsome front in their defense with Joe Klecko. Mark Gastineau was probably the biggest name. He won Defensive Player of the Year 1 year. Set the single season sack record at the time, which is a big part of the audio that we're about to play.
Gastineau introduced the sack dance to the world, which was not very much frowned upon back in the day. It was like, hey, what's this blue collar defensive lineman doing dancing? And the dancing was really bad. And he wasn't a guy that really was awesome versus the run or anything. He was kind of the first diva pass rusher.
Yes.
And a guy that very much very much concerned with his image and all that stuff.
Did he date Brigitte Nielsen? He did, right? Yeah.
Yeah. He used to take when they would have training camp. Jeff Lagerman was a teammate of mine who played with Gastineau.
Okay.
I think he was young. Lagerman was young when Gastineau was like a veteran and dating Brigitte Nielsen.
Yeah.
And they had training camp at Lehigh University, I think.
Pennsylvania.
And Gastineau just took the fine every night because he was for missing curfew because he was staying at a hotel. He was just living at a hotel, off campus with Brigitte Nielsen during training camp. And paying a pretty hefty fine every single night.
Dude.
That was the life he was living.
Worth it. She was fire back in the day, man. If you don't know who she is, kids, go find Rocky IV or Beverly Hills Cop 2. She is she's a star in both of those. Very, very attractive. But he was a big star, man, and it helped that he was in New York. But here's what happened is Mark Gastineau flamed out. You know, like I don't know what happened with him after football, like life after football. I don't know how it went for Mark Gastineau after football, but he's not in the Hall of Fame, but I think you can make an argument. You know, if you're somebody who looks at short bursts of dominance, he was a four-time first-team All-Pro, two-time 20-plus sack guy, set the single-season sack record until Michael Strahan broke it a couple decades later, and the belief was that the sack on which he broke it was Brett Favre basically just laying down for Michael Strahan. If you're a football fan, you know exactly what I'm talking about right now. And so when you don't have the single season sack record anymore like Mark Gastineau, especially when you grew up and played in an era where the money wasn't nearly what it is now, you make a lot of your money on that autograph circuit, speaking circuit, and so forth as the single season sack record holder.
Yeah.
And so Brett Favre basically laying down for Michael Strahan so Strahan could break Gastineau's record, apparently stuck in the craw of Mark Gastineau for many, many years, and still sticks in his craw 40 years later. Here's some audio from the 30 for 30 New York Sack Exchange. This is Brett Favre and Mark Gastineau. with some audio a little later on in this cut of Gastineau talking to the cameras for the 30 for 30. But the audio you're going to hear out of the shoot is Brett Favre walking up real friendly to Mark Gastineau, like, hey, buddy, we've met before. Gastineau, not a Favre fan.
Now you I thought we met a long time ago. At least I saw you.
Right.
How you doing?
When you fell down for him. I'm going to get my sack back. I'm going to get my sack back, dude.
You probably would hurt me.
Well, I don't care. You hurt me. You hurt me. You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
You really hurt me. You hurt me, Brett.
We got to get back to this, Brett. I'm sorry.
Anybody will tell you Brett Favre took a dive. And you know it. She knows it. He knows it. And everybody knows it. I didn't know what had happened. The NFL should have stopped that and said, listen, no, 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 no. That's not a sack. He took my record away from me.
Mark Gastineau's record of 22 sacks in a single season, which he achieved in 1984, stood until the final minutes of the 2001 season.
And you know what? No one's happier than Brett Favre. He gets the record.
Well, he got a gimme is what he got.
There was nobody else that wanted Michael to get that more than Brett, and he showed it right there.
The funniest part is the announcer celebrating this like this was some great deed that Brett did. Like, look at...
Yeah.
You know, like, they're fetting Brett Favre in that audio, in that play-by-play. It sounded like it was Troy Aikman, maybe Daryl Johnston on that call right there. They're fetting Brett Favre in that as much as they are Michael Strahan for breaking the record. Like Brett did a classy thing right there.
Yeah, I never liked it. I didn't like the...
It just doesn't...
Well, it's kind of like the same way when Nekisha Sales was allowed to go out and score that uncontested basket to break... what's her name's record from UConn? To break the scoring record there.
Yeah.
It's like, okay... People say, what's the big deal? It was just one play or one basket. Like, okay, the person whose record you're breaking had injuries to deal with, had timing, had shortened season, like all those other things. Like, yeah, that all factors into the course of an entire season or an entire career.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, those things don't sit well with me.
Yep.
And yet, what do you do about it? It sucks for Gastineau, but. The NFL is going to step in and somehow rewrite the rule book. Like, that's a sack in any game. If a quarterback just goes down because it's the end of the game or something, yeah, whoever's closest to him gets the sack. That's the way the sack records work.
Can you imagine being Brett Favre at that trade show that they were at, or that autograph show that they were at, and you're walking up to Mark Gastineau like, hey, we've met before. How you doing? Gastineau, if you listen to that audio, he's in tears talking to Brett Favre. Like,
yeah.
And finally... The third voice that you heard at the end of the autograph show audio was basically one of the guys handling Brett, grabbing him, saying, hey, Brett, we got to go over. You know, we got to, like, he's fishing him out of there. Like, he could tell how uncomfortable that conversation was.
Like, it felt like an old Jerry Springer show or something.
Yeah.
You come on because you think you're going to talk about, your dating life or something, and then out pops the surprise guest. Out walks Gastineau. We're like, you bullied me in high school, but now what do you think? And, like, he's going to beat him up or something. I don't know. I feel like Brett Favre's had experience dealing with dicey situations by now.
Recently.
It's probably like, put that on like, oh yeah, this is about the ninth most uncomfortable thing I've had to deal with. Yeah, get in line, Gastineau.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm dealing with the government.
Yeah. These 30 people, they're from the Mississippi government. Get behind them.
Yeah.
Favre tried to clear the air on this last night with a thread on Twitter. It was really funny seeing Brett Favre do that thing that people do where they put the emoji for the spool of thread right there to say, I got a thread coming here. He wanted to clear the air about the small dust-up, he calls it, between him and Mark Gastineau. Does his explanation hold water for you, Seth? He says, back in 2002, when Michael Strahan sacked me at the end of a game we had wrapped up, I was in no way trying to hurt Mark Gastineau. Now, that I believe. He was not thinking of Gastineau in the moment.
Definitely not. Yeah.
Said, I was trying to close out a game and squeeze the last bit of fun out of a hard-fought game. Okay. I booted out of a run thinking it would be wide open, saw Strahan standing there and ducked down. The game was over. There was no need for me to do anything spectacular. It probably wasn't Michael's best sack or tackle for loss. In a different game or situation, I would have made a bigger effort to avoid the TFL, but at no point was I thinking about hurting Gastineau. Maybe it crossed my mind to help Strahan. Yeah, maybe. I didn't think it through. That wasn't my forte at the time, that I believe.
That's some self-awareness.
All-time leader in interceptions, yes. He says, I see now how being the sack king would elevate his value at card shows, strengthen his case for the Hall of Fame, increase his demand as a... Now he's rubbing salt in the... I realize that in the following 12 ways, it would have been better for me to try maybe to avoid the sack. Yeah.
Maybe it would have... Maybe they could have... Gastineau and Brigitte Nielsen could have rekindled the flame of somehow. I don't know. Yeah, I've ruined everything about this guy's life.
I need to get in touch with the TriStar guys, with Bobby or Jeff from TriStar. Yeah. I bet they could... I bet Bobby or Jeff or both of them could quantify exactly how much... get in the ballpark of how much money he lost over the last 40 years, or it would really be over the last 20 years, because it was in 2002, 22 years is when Strahan's sack happened. But how much, like, go through the forensics of it, and how much did he lose by losing that record? Now, who knows, maybe the world changes. Maybe Strahan gets a sack anyway, whatever. But if he had been the all-time single-season sack leader for the last 20 years, how much did he lose out on?
You could probably look and see by actual appearances and everything how much that changed afterwards and all that.
It's easier just to call Bobby or Jeff and let them.
He missed out on the whole COVID era of the NFTs.
Yeah,
he could have sold more NFTs for 3 months back when everybody was buying something that. Hey, everybody on the text line, tell me how the NFTs are working out for you now.
Yeah, how are
your non-fungible tokens?
I never understood that, dude.
Nobody did.
Yeah.
Hey, you own this now. Okay, cool. Do I get to collect royalties on it? Yeah. Nope. Not a thing.
Yeah.
Hey, unpopular take.
Yeah.
While we're still on Gastineau.
Yeah.
As a kid, I never got the appeal of Brigitte Nielsen the way that you do, I think. She never really did it for me.
No.
I was always kind of like, if I want to date David Bowie, I'll date David Bowie. She wasn't my, I don't know. There was something.
She had nicer.
A little too scary.
Yeah, she was scary. I would definitely not have been able to satisfy her in the 80s. I'm pretty sure about that. Or the 90s, or the 2000s, or the 10s, or the 20s, or now. but it was, I think that was part of the allure to me, was her character in the, I like heels, I like the bad guys.
Oh, yeah, like she was this scary supervillain type.
In both Rocky IV and in Beverly Hills Cop 2. Good sequel, by the way. Both good sequels, by the way.
There wasn't enough curvature there for me, I think.
That's fair.
That was the big thing for me.
Yeah.
She's very attractive, obviously. I'm not sorry, but she just didn't appeal to me.
No, and to your David Bowie comment, I'm not a huge fan of the short haircut either.
Uh-huh.
I would have demanded that she grow her hair a little bit, because I would have had that kind of clout.
I would have made her perform Ziggy Stardust the entire album. and then have her beat the crap out of me.
Hey,
that would have been my little fantasy with Brigitte.
Can you say changes, turn and face? Yeah.
Can you dress up like an astronaut for chance?
Yeah, an astronaut. So were they tied when Strahan broke the record? I don't know if they were tied, but that sack was the difference in the record. I believe Brett Favre when he said, I wasn't trying to hurt Mark Gastineau, because I don't think Favre was that deep a thinker. But, dude, you're violating the code of the game.
When I was driving drunk, I didn't mean to total your vehicle.
Right.
Sorry. Yeah, all right. It doesn't really help me feel better that you were just wantonly negligent in that moment.
Text message, Gastineau was a jerk. His own teammate said so. He was only focused on sacks, not the run. I don't feel overly sorry for Mark. Look at this. I feel a little more sorry for him watching him weep openly in front of Brett Favre at that card show. I'm like, God, this is just sad.
It is, though. It's like the texter says, and I think people who were, paying attention during that era. Yeah, Gastineau is not a popular dude.
He was a heel.
He was very much an attention monger.
Yeah.
And like, oh, okay, now when he's seeking out this apology from Brett Favre, oh, yeah, big surprise, it's on camera.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, it's all part of the show. It feels like an extension of how Gastineau operated when he was a player. He wasn't like a pass rusher's pass rusher.
Right.
He was a defensive end's defensive end. He was in an era where there weren't a lot of guys that were just going after the sack and nothing else. He was that guy.
He was. I'm way more likely to watch this 30 for 30 now after seeing these clips, though. I don't know if I would have gone out of my way to watch it, I'm definitely recording it and watching it, though, after Gastineau is just like the vignettes of him. Like, he's an angry person right now about this, man.
Those guys, the biggest things you see from that era was, like, those before they started testing for steroids. I remember there was a picture of the sack exchange, and they're all standing shirtless, and they've all got abs, and, like, they all look like Aaron Donald.
Yes.
Like, it was just, there were just way too many guys that looked like Aaron Donald back then.
Yeah.
You could get it in a syringe.
Yep. Yep. I'm wondering if, I saw this clip come across my timeline yesterday, Seth, and I'm wondering if this is something that we need to do to go viral. This is a guy in, this is a host in Columbus, Ohio, a 97.1 The Fan named Mike Ricciardotti, and he just basically turned on the microphones yesterday and called Kirk Herbstreit, Ohio State Buckeye, former, Ohio State legend, started calling him names.
Playoff bracket unveiled yesterday. By the way, I like how everybody's just discovering now that Kirk Herbstreit's a douchebag. Like, I've been talking about this for 20 years. Welcome to my world. Now, there's stuff behind the scenes, and there's some personal stuff that goes into my story. But this is a guy who's always been ashamed of college football fans. This is a guy who makes his living talking down to you. Mm-hmm. For some reason, people still eat it up. They think he's the everyman. Oh, look at him.
Well, no, because
look at him and his dog.
Okay. I mean, that got a lot of run yesterday.
Oh, God. Bringing his dog into it, though.
I know.
I didn't catch that part the first time around. Yeah.
That you're right. Yeah, I didn't either. I was just sitting there listening. I like how the dude basically points out, like, yeah, I got serious personal issues with this guy. Like, okay.
That's right. It's like criticizing Adam Walsh and bringing up his kid or something. What the hell?
Yeah.
They just say, okay, let's create some boundaries here, man.
Whoa. Yeah. The part where he talks about Herbstreit talking down to fans, I'm guessing that's where Kirk Herbstreit, he does get a little upset, like fans rushing the field or fans, do it. There was something that happened in a game in the last few weeks where Kirk Herbstreit is like, oh, it's the throwing of things on the field. When fans are throwing bottles on the field, and Kirk Herbstreit was kind of like, there's no place for this. This needs to stop. Called them clowns. Called the fans clowns. I kind of agree with him on that. Like, what? Like, so Kirk Herbstreit's a douchebag because he thinks that fans throwing bottles and paraphernalia on the field are clowns?
Does he have a little bit of, remember how Joe Buck used to be like that? Yeah, Joe Buck used to be almost kind of sanctimonious about stuff.
I've never sensed that with Herbstreit, and I've got a pretty good sanctimonious radar, and I've never sensed that with Herbstreit before.
I think Herbstreit has that, it's a double-edged sword of, when you champion a fan base, then and your alma mater or what have you, then it's also kind of, they expect undying loyalty and no criticism whatsoever.
Who should you and I go after in the broadcasting industry that has ties to Houston that might get, like, should we go after Andre Ware? I love Andre Ware. I think Andre's great at his job. Should we just randomly come on here and say, that Andre Ware's a real douchebag?
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, I'm so sick.
Right. And not give any reasons. Cite some phony personal reasons, and then just say in generalities that he talks down to fans. None of that's true about Andre, though. No, I can't bring myself to do it.
I guess, but we had a... I would say the city of Houston has had kind of an interesting relationship with Clyde Drexler when he was a broadcaster.
Okay. Yeah.
So that might be the clue. But Clyde's not a jerk.
No.
I think it was more, there were a lot of people that might have loved Clyde the basketball player, but they might not have loved his actual, no, television career.
To be clear, whoever it is we go after, we need to go after them personally and with great force and name calling.
Would Kenny Smith go after Kenny?
Everybody knows that Kenny Smith. No, I've met Kenny Smith a couple times. He's delightful and he's good at his job. And I don't think Kenny Smith talks down to people at all.
No, that's right. I don't know. I can't think of anybody. I'm sure the text line will have somebody.
Yeah.
Who in broad... J.J. Watt?
Now, that would be something.
He's in broadcasting.
That would be something.
Should we start tearing into J.J.? You called J.J. Watt a D-bag.
Call him a D-bag. I'm going to go home today and take my framed, autographed, personalized J.J. Watt jersey, get out a hammer, and just smash the glass open and throw it off my balcony. Yes. Might have to be J.J. Watt, man. That would go viral. I don't think it would be good long term for us here.
Kelvin Murphy? You got that in your bag? You want to go after Kelvin Murphy?
No, dude, no. No, because that could get physical.
Kelvin Murphy would whip your butt.
He would whip my ass worse than Brigitte Nielsen would. All right, Payne and
Kelvin
Penner.
Murphy might be the one, though, that I think people could come up with something that, you know, like if you, boy, who's got it in him to the, this feels like we gotta tell Ron to go after Kelvin Murphy.
Yes. Why not just walk him to an open window and push him? It's easier. Oh my God, that's funny. Okay, someone said go after Shaq. Shaq, here's what would happen with Shaq. Shaq wouldn't whoop your ass. Shaq would turn it into a $100 million douchebag endorsement. He would somehow take calling him a D-bag and turn it into like a nine-figure payday somehow.
But that doesn't quite fit with the theme of going after, you know, a homegrown guy or whatever.
Well, Shaq Shaq's got a house here in Houston.
Yeah, but he's not homegrown. It's not in no circles is he known as a Houston sports legend.
People are suggesting Milo Hamilton. We're not going after somebody who can't defend
Milo Hamilton,
himself.
There's already a Twitter account for that.
Yeah, there is. Jim Nance is getting a lot of suggestions on the text page.
Okay, now Jim Nance.
That's a good one, yeah.
Jim Nance basically did an angry mic drop on the afternoon show.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
When it was before Ron got here.
Ron's
though, right?
already gone after Jim Nance.
Was it with Ron and Clint?
It was. It was at the Houston Sports Awards, yeah.
they asked him about the Deshaun Watson situation. Yeah. Before the Houston Sports Awards, and Jim Nance was not happy about it at all.
Yeah, we've got that audio. We can probably find it somewhere. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Top of the hour, we will circle back to the Texans. Nick Caserio will talk about thoughts coming out of the bye, the biggest unknowns going into this three-game gauntlet. But up next, speaking of basketball, are the Rockets making any of their young core available for a Houston legend? Do you want them to make this deal? Raphael Stone actually talked about this, and we'll have that for you coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
There's a lot of people thinking we should go after Jim Nance.
Okay.
We'll get to it. Let's pay off on the tease, and we'll circle back. If you missed it, we played audio from a Columbus, Ohio radio host who went after Kirk Herbstreit, called him a D-bag. Kirk Herbstreit, who went to Ohio State. And that was good enough to make a little viral run for the host yesterday from that particular host whose name is Mike Ricardotti. Everybody knows him now.
He's huge in Houston now.
Everybody knows him now. So Seth and I were kind of workshopping who we should go
Ricardotti on. I'm going to go full Ricardotti on this one.
Who are we Ricardotting?
Which Houston sports legend are we going to Ricardot?
In broadcasting. Which Houston sports legend who's in broadcasting?
Well, yeah, or Houston, either a homegrown Houstonian or a Houston athlete who went into broadcasting.
Yep, yeah, that's
so
right.
Jim Nance was suggested by several people.
Getting a lot of run. Now, Nance has already had the back and forth with the station. We'll get to that in a second. Hey, real quick. Yeah. Miami is reportedly making Jimmy Butler, old Jimmy Buckets, available. 35 years old.
Speak of the devil.
Tombaulian. Yeah. He's a Houstonian.
Well, don't call him a Houstonian. He's a Tombaulian.
He's a Tombaulian.
He doesn't like that. That's not me talking. That's him. He's like, hey, I'm from Tomball. Houston. I'm Tomball.
He is from the ball. Definitely not name-calling Jimmy Buckets at all, for sure. He would definitely whoop my ass. At age 35 or age 95, he would. But Raphael Stone and the Rockets are a team that's being brought up quite a bit with Jimmy Butler, because I think there's two schools of thought with that. One, there's this big thought out there that the Rockets are looking to star hunt now with this young core they have. They've got the assets to supplement the guys they would want to keep with a big star. That's where the Giannis rumors were coming from earlier. Jimmy Butler fits that mold. You know, he's an older guy who's been a multi-time all-star, really good postseason player. He's a dog on D. He feels like an Ime Udoka kind of guy.
Yeah.
But he's 35. Here is Raphael Stone. So that's one school of thought. And the other school of thought is, hey, Jimmy Butler has local ties. This seems like it would make sense. Raphael Stone was on Sirius XM NBA radio, and he was saying, we're good right now.
Of course, my job is to be open to everything, so I'm not going to not do my job. We like this team. You know, we definitely do not intend to change anything, and I would be shocked if something changes this season. You know, we like where we're at. We want to continue to develop our guys. You know, and full stop. And you know, will I listen to other teams? Of course I will. That's my job. You know, but again, no. It's, you know, there's no part of me. There's no part of our decision making process that suggests that we're looking to do anything big now or in the near term. And you know, we definitely want this group to be as good as it can be this year, and then we'll evaluate things at the end of the year. But the hope is very much that this core group can lead us to where we want to go, and that from a transactional perspective, we're largely done.
I think that's not your typical GM speak, you know, like saying that he'd be shocked if something changed or what have you. And I don't think that he needs to play hardball or just try to look like they're not looking to try to drive a good price. If you look at the mixture of young and old on this team, I think they've done a really good job of creating that blend. I think that I love the fact that last week after that, the one loss, that Udoka said they played soft. And instead of making a big case out of it, Fred VanVleet said, yeah, we were soft in that game.
Yep.
That's not us. We're going to be better. You know, like that right there is exactly the kind of veteran leadership I think you want. And I think it's emblematic of just, yeah, they've brought in, Dylan Brooks raised a lot of eyebrows in terms of, okay, well, what kind of veteran leadership is he bringing? Man, it's the right kind. It's the right Draymond Green element of edge that you want. And I like the blend of personalities and young and old on the team.
I do too. I think both of those guys are great example. Like those are both guys who kind of like came up through the NBA mud as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they were, you know, Fred VanVleet, I don't think was even drafted coming out of Wichita State, you know? And so, so those are guys that have had to battle to get to where they are too. They weren't, yeah, you know, they weren't anointed the great ones coming into the league. So I'm with you on that. I'm with Raphael Stone right now too. I'm not itching to make a deal, you know, I don't want to say gut this thing or break the group up, but you, in some sense, depending on what the trade looked like, you'd be breaking up this core, and maybe improving the team, but maybe not. And for a 35-year-old Jimmy Butler, for what Miami's probably looking for him, I don't know. Without seeing what the trade would be, it's hard to say a firm yes or no. But if I had to blindly say, do I want to make a Jimmy Butler trade? I would say no right now. I'm with Raphael Stone on this.
And Butler he's cruising along and doing what just so many more NBA players do, is just being really viable players on into their mid-30s.
Yeah.
You know, he's still averaging 32 minutes a night. He's averaging 19 points a game, but at 55% shooting.
Yeah.
He's shooting the ball better than he has in his entire career.
Yep.
So it's not like I'm pooping on Jimmy Butler or anything. I like the mix right now.
I do too.
I like it.
I do too. It's fun. All right, so we've got texts coming in. Seth and I, if you've been listening earlier this segment, we played audio from Mike Ricciardotti of Columbus, who called Kirk Herbstreit, Columbus and Ohio State legend, a douchebag on his show, and that got viral. So Seth and I have been workshopping. All right, so who in broadcasting with Houston ties, if we were to go after them, so we, Payne and Pendergast, could go viral today. Jim Nance is getting a lot of votes on here that we should name call him. I don't know that we're going to necessarily do that, but Jim Nance does have history with the station. Here was the Houston Sports Awards. He has history with the afternoon show. This was the Houston Sports Awards probably back in 21 or 22, because Deshaun Watson.
It was 21. We were coming out of COVID. It was one of the first like big, large events we did, because it was outdoors up in the Woodlands. And
No. I don't think this was the Woodlands one. I think this was... Oh, no, you're right. Armin was there. Yes. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. This was the Woodlands one. Yes. This was the Woodlands one on the red carpet at the Woodlands Houston Sports Awards. And here's how it went.
Jim Nance, the great Jim Nance, is with us on the red carpet. And... Jim, man, you cover everything from baseball, from basketball to the NFL to golf. With the Texans, have you ever seen an offseason quite like this, from the end with the quarterback?
Honestly, it wasn't even on my mind, man. I just got the red carpet. We're wanting to get into a controversy. I'm living in California. I know what the national media is writing about it. I sure hope all this gets worked out, but I don't have much more to say about it than that right now. It's not, I'm trying to make my way through about 100 media members that are friends of mine. So,
well, we appreciate you stopping.
What else you guys got?
That's it.
Want to talk about what's wrong with the Texans?
The adventure.
I don't want to talk about the Super Bowl or the Final Four of the Masters. We want to talk about what's wrong with the Texans. Gotcha. I know where you're coming from. Thanks, guys.
And then he left. What? Yeah, and he did, and then he had words for Armin afterwards.
He did. We should paint one part of the picture. Clint and Ron were not in the same place with Jim Nance. Jim Nance was on the red carpet with the headphones. They were back in studio.
Yeah.
So they couldn't kind of see what was going on with that.
Yeah.
But he did put down the headphones and walk away.
We put down the headphones, and he said something to the program director, Armin, about, like, real classy or something like that.
Yeah.
He's like, that part didn't make the air, but it was, you know what? In listening to that, I don't think it came through how disgruntled he was by the question.
No.
To his credit as a, professional that he is, I think that if you could see his face, when he set the headset down and everything, he was way more disgruntled than it sounded. So, using that audio, if I had listened to it, I wouldn't have thought it was that big of a deal. I thought he was kind of like jibing him and not actually all that upset or anything.
Yeah, the mere fact that he walked off. You could hear, like, Clint's trying to get in question number two. You know, you could hear Clint.
Was that the first question?
It was the very first question.
Oh,
yeah.
At the very
beginning of that audio, they welcomed him onto the show. Yeah.
And he was about to receive a Lifetime Achievement Award.
That was the other thing we should point out. Like, yeah, he was the star of the Houston Sports Awards that night.
I might be more on the side of Jim Nance after listening to that.
Okay.
I think the Houston legend we're going to go after today is Clint Sterner.
Or Ron Hughley.
Who I know, though, by the way. I know the way Armin operates. I think that was probably, they were probably told, listen, you got to get something
right,
on Deshaun. Got to get something on Deshaun.
Oh, yeah.
Which is what Armin should have been doing.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Oh, guaranteed. Yeah, right. Boy, and Jim Nance was knocked on his heels, man.
I haven't listened to that in a long, long time, and it doesn't sound nearly as bad as I had remembered in my brain.
Yeah.
So I don't think Jim Nance got. Now, I didn't like the whole Jim Nance necktie thing at the NCAA championship.
Oh, yeah.
I never really got that.
Dude, you're one name call away from making this a Nance viral thing right now.
No. I've talked about this before. That's the thing. That radio host up in Ohio called Kirk Herbstreit a D-bag.
Yes.
Like, that's where you're going over the edge. It's one thing to criticize one thing or something.
Right.
But he just basically globally said, no, this guy's a D-bag about Kirk
Herbstreit. And now the world is finding out.
Yeah, I can genuinely say I don't think there's any people in media right now from Houston or that were Houston athletes that I feel that way about.
No, like no.
That, oh, they're genuine D-bags.
No, I don't feel strongly enough to be truthful about it. Are there any that I feel strongly enough that I want our show to go viral that I would be like,
that
I'd walk up to them afterwards and be like, hey, man, I was just joking about that. You know, we're just trying to, get a little traction for the show.
If you do it, I'm going to just give you the Dan Orlovsky face the whole time.
Oh, yeah, do that. Yeah. The first take face.
Because if it goes viral, I don't want people to think I'm endorsing your take by laughing or
totally
something.
Fair.
So I'm just going to... There.
Totally fair. There you go. If you're watching on YouTube or Twitch, watch on YouTube or Twitch, and you can see Seth right now. Biggest X factors and unknowns.
Houston Shock Jock goes after Dan Orlovsky.
You're going to be the one who gets the heat. Biggest X factors and unknowns going into this three-game gauntlet for the Texans. We'll hear from Nick Caserio. That's coming up next.